Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for December 11th, 2017. It's a Monday. It's a gray, gray Monday.
It's beautiful outside. It's gray. We had a beautiful red sunrise and little flecks of snow coming down out of the sky.
We'd just like to send our thoughts and prayers to all those in the south for this Snowmageddon of snowpocalypse, Snowmageddon of 2017.
I think 4 inches in my former hometown, or my hometown, really? Of Corpus Christi.
4 inches.
Yeah, it was people were rushing to the stores for bread and milk.
That's so weird. Why does everybody go out to get bread and milk?
Well, I think it was a joke because I noticed that in Binghamton, maybe there's a reason to, that before, if the weather forecast is for a storm, go to Weiss and people are it's crowded.
Well,
and in the south,
yeah, but I wouldn't just buy bread and milk. I would buy a lot of things. Ground beef.
No, you got to get the staples. You got to get the.
I'd buy some firewood. Weiss. I'd buy some.
You could buy cheaply lots of bread and
cheese.
Lots of milk. It'll keep you alive.
I just don't want gallons and gallons of bread and milk.
Remember, was it this year we had 26-inch snow. 27-inch snow here in Binghamton.
Yeah, but we didn't know. We didn't go out to the store before that.
No. We managed to survive on the meager rations of the refrigerator that we had.
We had, and we couldn't drive up the hill.
Right.
We had to keep circling.
Yeah.
And come in from the other direction.
But we did drive. South, we drove. No one knows how to drive in the snow. So, and no one knows how to, and the electric system isn't, made to.
Well, do you mean the grid?
The stuff isn't made to hold up under the heavy weight of 4 inches of snow.
Oh, you mean like the power lines and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So it's like it just everything.
So even just one bare drop of snowflake is going to bring the whole grid down.
Yeah. As I remember when I was a kid in Houston, or when I went to Houston for Christmas, and it snowed. And it was like an inch or two, but man, that was like the best day of my childhood life. It really was. It was awesome. I was like 11 or maybe not younger than that probably. But I tried to make a snowman, but
with 1 inch.
Yeah, but it was cool. You woke up in the morning. No one expected it, so you see this white blanket of snow, and you go outside. And I'd never seen snow actually before up until that point.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, that was my first experience with it. And then we moved up here, and in 2004, it snowed in Corpus Christi again. They had 5 inches that time,
wow. I think.
So it was like...
snows every year here. Snowmageddon. Well, I've enjoyed all the pictures on Facebook. But I did ask your mother for pictures. And she did provide me before that a very brief traffic report, like how hard it was to get from one place to another. Before
no one has any idea how to drive in the snow. When I first moved up here, I had no idea how to drive in the snow. So it was, and if you have, no one has snow tires, of course. So
we don't have snow tires.
No, we don't.
We've never had snow tires.
We have a front wheel drive.
No, we don't.
Honda Odyssey. Yes, it is.
Oh, we do.
It's front wheel drive.
Oh. No, but we used to have a four-wheel drive thing.
Yeah. But front-wheel drive is easier to drive in the snow than back-wheel drive. But
that's the extent of our knowledge about cars.
That's what I know
about
cars.
And snow driving.
No, actually, I'm becoming a mechanic lately.
Yeah, you are.
I've replaced the MAF filter. And the MAF filter.
Okay. Is that math or MAF?
MAF. M-A-F.
Oh, MAF. Okay.
Yeah, it stands for something. It filters out the MAFs.
The toxic MAF.
That goes from the pipey thing to the other pipey thing.
And then you replaced an actual pipe.
Yeah, I took the upper radiator hose was leaking, and I took it off, and I bought another pipe that actually fit the particular car that we have, and I put another pipe on.
Like a Christmas miracle.
It was. Just in time for your parents to use the car. So.
And then after that, you came inside and poked a hole in the sink.
Now I got to replace a sink pipe, right? Because we have a big bucket underneath the sink in our kitchen. Not our kitchen sink, but our kitchen bathroom sink. So when we turn the water on it, a stream of water goes
straight out
into the bucket.
To the bucket.
Well, it was the reason I poked a hole is because the pipe was clogged.
So poking a hole in it seemed like the obvious thing.
I was trying to poke a a hanger down there to clear the clog.
A hanger?
Yeah, that's what you do. You
what do you mean you? That's not a thing. I'm pretty sure you don't take a. Was it a metal hanger?
Yeah. Yeah, you just poke a metal hanger down there and you...
Did you see that on YouTube?
No, I read about it. And then instead of doing that, I poked a hole in the pipe, which cleared the clog.
It did. Water flows freely now. There is no backup into the sink whatsoever. Well, we weren't going to do a...
You know why the pipe clogs? Because our children... Yeah, I don't know what the thing is with the toilet paper. They put it on the counter of the kitchen bathroom, and instead of using the roll that's on the side of the bath, they put another roll in the sink, and then I frequently find toilet paper wads in the sink.
What
thing? Yeah, that's how it gets clogged up. I don't know what they're doing.
I don't really want to know.
Yeah.
Actually. That doesn't interest me at all. I don't want.
You're right. I didn't think about what the possibility there is.
So, that's terrible. Okay. I can't remember what we were going to talk about for this podcast now.
Disappearing people.
Oh, yeah. I was kind of shocked. So Garrison Keillor apparently did something unforgivable. There must be more.
We don't know what he... Because apparently it said he touched a woman's back. And I'm sorry, that's not...
Okay, well, he shouldn't have done it.
If you touch my back and...
Okay, but
and
you're, we're married.
Right, no, so. But if some woman surreptitiously sneaks up and touches my back, you know, I'm just not... I will forgive her. It will be okay. I know it'd be tempting. I mean, my back is so wonderful looking that women could hardly keep their hands off my back. But...
There must be something more.
Right.
There has to be for them to fire him forthwith.
Yeah, I'm assuming there must be. Something.
Okay, but what's really interesting to me is that it looks like NPR, Minnesota Public Radio, has expunged all of Prairie Home from all the archives of the last 30 years. And I read about that at the same moment that I was reading about whether or not if you love the Met Opera, should you take all of your James Levine CDs and or you know discs and throw them out the window?
That's absurd.
Well, but people are wondering what to do. I mean, this is exactly the same question I think as the war memorial issues. If you find out that a past general of a war has done something unspeakable, should you take his memorial and crush it under your heel?
Well, we should do it with all the Martin Luther King statues and the civil rights movement, because Martin Luther King apparently was, you know, sexually promiscuous in various ways and probably touched women without their permission at some certain point. So let's do away with all of the civil rights movement. And I imagine that we could probably find some other historical personages who have done wonderful things that we can just wipe off. This is ridiculous. It's absurd. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that?
Well, I do find it's kind of tragic. Like, so, you know, 30 years of Prairie Home Companion, which, okay, admittedly in the last 10 years it got to be kind of dumb. You should get rid of the last 10 years when it became more and more political.
Well, get rid of it?
But so all of his work... Wait,
you say get rid of it? Like, what do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they got rid of them forever, but they're not there anymore.
No, but you think they should get rid of the last 10 years?
I was joking.
Oh.
Well, okay, the program got bad towards the end, so yeah. They don't need to keep those
You're
ones.
Right. It can be more and more political and even sexual.
Yeah,
and
we had to turn it off because it was with the kids. We had little kids in the kitchen on Saturday night, and we had to turn it off because it was inappropriate for young children. So
I used to like listening to it.
Well, that's the thing. So it's interesting, I guess. I don't know if it's interesting. I think it's actually kind of scary anything that you've done, unless you're pure morally and you have never sinned, your work has no value whatsoever. That's kind of what the implication is,
right.
Isn't it?
Right.
If you've sinned, Okay, if you've sinned in this way, so I'm assuming maybe
Not
you
every
could
sin, but
sin,
that particular kind of
yeah,
sin.
if you could sin in some other way and your work could still have value.
Yeah.
But that's quite scary, you know, because we're already kind of headed towards sweeping up everybody in the world into a really bad, I mean, I'm not morally pure, but are, yeah, I mean, maybe I am. I feel like I might be. I'm obviously better than Garrison Keillor. I don't know whatever he's done.
Well, you did touch my back once, so.
So, well, what it, I just find this extraordinary.
And I
We
didn't
can't
do
have any
anything.
history. We can't have any
It's not, well, you know, it's not really
personhood.
extraordinary, because I'm reading right now The Great Terror by Robert Conquest, which is an excellent book. It's talking about the purges under Stalin. And, you know, for Stalin to, Stalin had a, was trying to create a kind of myth around himself that he was instrumental in the October Revolution, and that he was, you know, Lenin's right-hand man. And of course he wasn't, and in fact Lenin had some real reservations about Stalin, and did not want him to be his successor. But all of that had to be shut up, and Stalin was ruthless, and he was trying to find a way to, you know, change the past, really, to create this kind of myth, and all at the same time get rid of his rivals in the party. So, you know, the whole thing started with him engineering kind of a murder of a guy named Kirov in Leningrad, and then the subsequent investigation of that murder, which went on for years, you know, found plotters in every.
Every sphere.
Everyone was part of the plot. Everybody, and they all got wiped out. And once you were arrested and made to confess and had your show trial and executed, then they would wipe out your name from the records. They would and they would. They actually, you can find pictures online of them taking pictures where this person had been right next to Lenin, or right in the group of the original October revolutionaries, and their faces are smudged out, and someone else's face is put there.
Been put on like
Yeah, it's
early
crazy.
Photoshop.
Yeah, early. Yeah, it's
Huh.
early Photoshopped. It's crazy. So this is not new. This is
No, I mean, yeah, you're, it's
it's a
not.
rewriting of history, though, but it's something that totalitarian regimes do, I think.
I mean, it's it okay, so 'cause I think there must be this there's this sort of desperation and a little it just it feels panicky to me. You know, National Public Radio feels like they have to just do this or something bad is going to happen to them. I don't think they're trying to, you know, they're not Stalin. They're just all trying to keep their jobs, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't that is it's the reason this ha this ha you couldn't, in the Soviet Union under Stalin, you couldn't seem to be seen to be associated with, friends with, even defending lighter sentences for people who were implicated in this thing, and so they really became non-persons. And there was a lot of political pressure for that to take place. So I think that's similar here. It's not that NPR is stolen, but there's this again,
No, and
you know,
yeah,
you can't defend Matt Lauer. You can't defend, I mean, you can't, Matt Lauer is now a
Well,
person.
it's not even
He's a
defense. You
non-person.
can't, yeah, you can't say
He's a non-person.
yeah. It's really.
And I, it
I mean,
was
but
terrible. It
it's
was
not
awful,
driven
but.
by one. It's not driven by one person. It's a
No, it's a
sort of
culture that's taken on this
cultural
kind of
movement that's sort of
totalitarian.
happened suddenly.
Right.
And what's so curious to me is that it's about sex. It's about the one thing that was supposed to be so great, and then it turns on a dime. It just
Yeah.
suddenly turns, and you, if you have looked at a woman and thought about her lustfully in your heart, you're gone,
Yeah.
which that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so quick from what, 1960 to 2017, and suddenly we're
Right back to.
men can't
But it's a weird
sin.
kind of pure. It's a weird kind of.
Yeah, because we
It's not that
it's
sex
not.
is bad. It's that. I'm trying to think about
Yeah,
that.
I can't. It's not like we have morality now. It's not like we're truly moral. We have good moral paradigms about sex. It still has to be free and open, but it's now, I think, sort of weirdly and horribly even more tainted.
Yeah. So you can have any kind of sex you want, but you need to make sure...
Well, maybe you better not, though.
There needs to be signed consent, I guess.
Well, that's already, you know, that was encouraged by the University of California, was trying to get students to make sure that they signed off for each other so that they wouldn't get into trouble. And I thought that was absurd, but I really
Well, they shouldn't be having sex in the first place.
Well, no, of course they should.
But that wasn't the problem.
No, it's not that they, the university could have said,
you guys shouldn't be having sex.
Yeah, don't, because you're not married to each other.
Right.
Don't do that. Right. Or you're acting like children. Don't.
Right.
That's not what they said. They wanted people to sign pieces of paper before they engaged in, you know, held hands or anything like that, which is weirder even than some of the stuff I've read about the Victorian era, or, you know, sex in the past.
So you're right. This, the culture, though, that is, has become one of rewriting history. I'm depersoning.
Yeah, people, the sinner.
The sinner. No flexibility or forgiveness allowed. It's basically a public execution of the person.
Yeah, because, well, and you can do that because of social media. You can publicly, you don't have to go through the horror of actually murdering them. You can just deperson them online, and then that's they still get to live. So that's better, I guess.
Sure, sure.
Or it's weird. It's weird.
So we were kind of going back to what we were saying last week about the only hope being the gospel here, because you at least in the gospel you can say, okay, I did this thing, or at least in Christianity you can say, I did this thing. I'm willing to lose my job, you know, lose my position because of what I've done. But then there's forgiveness and restoration. Maybe not back to the job you had, but to the community, to the church, and communion and all of the parts that go into being a human person in the church.
I just read this morning that I guess Ray Rice, who I don't know who that is, honestly I have no idea, but he did something terrible, or he hit his wife in an elevator. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh no, I've heard about this. Yeah,
and he was fired by the NFL, which I think was fine, good. I guess he can lose his job, but he became a Christian or something, or he got help from a pastor. He's regularly seeing a pastor and a counselor, and he is still with his wife, and he went and talked at Liberty University about how he's tried to amend. So he's not playing football anymore, but he's recovering his relationships. But apparently there was a huge firestorm, and people thought it was really terrible that he should go to Liberty and talk.
Why?
And then
were students upset, or was the public upset?
I think it was the public. Yeah. I'm not really sure. But and the idea that he could sort of be restored to personhood upset some people.
Scandalous, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really... So this is like a living picture of what I've been... you know, wishing could happen for men. You know, I think it would be really great if men who really do sin, I mean, if you've really sinned, and it can be really called sin, imagine if you could be restored to personhood and life. But the people were really upset that he...
Secular people were upset.
I think so. That's interesting. Because I'm trying to...
I kind of bring... We were having a conversation yesterday with people at dinner, and... One of the people who was over here was saying how kind of new Christians. He said, I can't understand how God can forgive
really terrible people.
And his wife said, yeah, well, do you think that God really does forgive people who are child molesters and people who do horrible things to children or touch people in ways like that? And I said, and they were really curious. And why were they curious about that? And I think they're because. In our culture, those are.
There's no forgiveness.
There's no forgiveness for that, and there shouldn't be, you know, social forgiveness in the sense that, hey, well, I molested a child, so I'm still keeping my job as, you know, kindergarten teacher, no, but there should, but the idea that you can be restored as a person and forgiven is gone. And even Christians are having a hard time struggling with it. And it's scandalous. It is scandalous because the human way of thinking about things. And when we do even approach the concept of actual justice and right and wrong, the human tendency is to want vengeance, and that vengeance must be unrelenting. You know, you just destroy the enemy, you destroy the person in the wrong. And what also happens is it tends to be that we identify those sins that we don't actually commit as the most heinous ones, worthy of the worst possible condemnation, and it makes us feel better. It makes us feel moral to destroy Matt Lauer
because you're not as bad as him.
I've never
put a button under my desk,
right?
And I'm good. I'm a good person.
And if I can express how outraged I am at Matt Lauer on social media, and how he should never have a job again, he should be depersoned, then my moral virtue is made plain to the world.
The thing that bothers me is that I don't think it's helpful for people who have been abused to have to live in a world either where there's no forgiveness for the abuser. Not that they have to
be with them
be on board or even I would say, look, if you've been really horribly hurt by somebody and you can't forgive them, you can't get there. Or it takes you 50 years, you know. I totally get that. But I think it's really dangerous, ultimately, if you create and you continue to create a class of people who can't ever do anything to make anything right.
Yeah.
You know, like, I guess there's nothing that Garrison Keillor can do now. You know, an apology would be...
I mean, you think... I always thought his politics would save someone like... I mean,
that's what's interesting about it.
You can't...
I thought his politics would save him.
He's a liberal of liberals. He can't climb out from any of this.
No.
I mean, Bill Clinton survived because he was... And was they loved him. Feminists loved him because of his politics. And he could abuse and molest underage interns in the Oval Office.
But he had the right politics, so it was okay. Right. It was okay, but...
Well, we're saying this, and Trump survives.
Well, that's what's... there's actual people on the left are saying we shouldn't have done this with Bill Clinton because now we have Trump. I've heard a few people say maybe there's a little bit of we shouldn't have done this because we didn't think it would go this far, and somebody that we really hate would be there, but, you know... The right and the left have both embraced.
I can see why they would think that, because the right at the time was saying things like, well, character matters, and we can't have someone who's lied to his wife and cheated on her or had sexual relationships outside of his marriage or abused his power to touch women. We can't have someone like that in the White House because we wouldn't be able to trust that his word to the nation is true if we can't trust that his word to his wife is true. That was the conservative position.
And liberals,
I mean, maybe, you know, for all their faults, but maybe took conservatives at their word, saying, ah, well, look, these people are won't have this problem, so we don't have to, we can defend Bill Clinton without having to worry that
it'll spread to the other side.
It'll spread to the other side because they're so, you know, puritanical
and dummies.
But it turns out, in fact, that was all a big lie, and we don't care about our own, conservatives don't care about our own politicians' character, just so long as they have the right, semi-right positions on certain things. I've got this argument online with this guy, but you know, I don't want to get into Trump, but Trump is our winged victory cherub from God guy, you know, okay?
Well, okay, I think pseudo-conservatives looked at what happened on the left and figured, oh, well, he just wins all the time, and there's nothing to be gained by holding to morality or to making that argument. If you're going to make the argument that character matters, you're gonna lose every time, and they're tired of losing.
Mm-hmm.
All so we wanted to win, and so now we're winning. And I think if you're sort of a secular conservative or a Christian who loves America as much as you love God, then you know you're tired of.
And there are those, or you so intertwine the two.
You're tired of. You just get tired of all the losing. You know, you get tired of the losing. And it doesn't, there's no temporal, you know, and I think we just don't know how to delay gratification. So, you know, right. Bill Clinton won. Well, now it's our turn to win. There's nothing holding the center.
Why is it, though? I mean, I think Trump will survive. I don't think he's going to, I don't think the Democrats can go and they can make Al Franken resign. They can make all the other people resign.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's because Republicans, I should stop saying conservatives, aren't going to let go because they've seen that Democrats never let go. They never, ever threw anybody under the bus. Ever. And so they're going to do that now because that worked. And so now Democrats are like desperately throwing each other under the bus, trying to stop the train.
Hoping that the moral
argument will win now, will work. And
you know, actually,
it doesn't.
Okay,
it's not
in some ways,
work.
I hope it does. I mean, I would like there to be some accountability.
Rowan, guys, go away and be quiet.
She says with motherly affection.
I love your children.
I wish there would be. I wish the moral argument would work. I mean, the good outcome of all this purging, which it is, it's a purge, would be the return of some kind of moral standard in our sexual lives. And I actually hope that in some way Trump has to pay some kind of penalty for his actions.
That's not going to be what happens.
I know it's not, but if it were, that'd be good. And then but within that sphere, you need the gospel. Right? So it would be good if this puritanical streak were, and I don't mean that really because
because I don't think the Puritans is really like they cannot be blamed for this.
No, they cannot be blamed for this. But this Victorian streak, I guess, that of morality would win out, but that it would be tempered by
mercy.
By mercy and maybe a recovery of the gospel, which won't happen. That won't happen. But we can
no, do. I really, I said this on the radio,
mm-hmm.
John and Kathy on the ride home. I said we're not gonna recover the gospel or morality. We're gonna end up with more and more technology and robots and less human interaction because it's so dangerous now. It's so dangerous for a man to look at a woman and think about her lustfully in his heart that he's going to go out and get a robot. And women are going to become more and more isolated. And men are going to become more and more isolated. We are going to have this weird, weird separating of human persons from each other. And this dark, weird, moral, but not tethered to mercy and charity, dark, lives where we can't be with each other. Right. That's I think that's where we're headed. Where we have to be really careful what we say because robots, it's the Internet of Things is going to record everything we say anyway, and eventually they're going to be able to read our minds, and so.
In the old timey days, right? There was
what like yesterday.
Well, before pornography, before sex robots. before pornography was widely available, you know, in the old timey days, right? So before the 70s, before the 60s, let's go back to, you know, turn of the century, earlier. If within a respectable family, if a man in that family found a woman in another respectable family attractive, and he would like to ultimately marry that woman or just take her out and decide whether it or not.
Well, he can't take her. He wouldn't have.
They could. There was courtship. There was a courtship.
Well, they could have taken a walk together with.
They could take
with
a
somebody
with
else.
A chaperone, right? Yeah. So they get to know each other. I can sit in the front porch, with you know, with the chaperone sitting across from them. And even like when my mom and dad were younger, there were you know your younger sister would go in the car, if you went to the drive-thru or the drive-in movie. You know, she would sit in the back seat and you guys would sit in the front seat.
That's horrible. It's so awful.
No, but it was okay. But so you had the limits on what could possibly happen, but also you had the room for flirtation, for pursuit, for a male to make his intentions known, and then ultimately, if he plays his cards right, and you know actually buys the cow, he can marry the woman.
He can have all the milk.
That a bad intention?
Yeah, that's horrible. Okay. And you should be expunged from personhood, and your internet memory should be erased.
but you know, there's room for pursuit, and I think that was, you know, it's safeguarded against
predators.
It's safeguarded against men touching women in inappropriate ways and in unwanted ways, and. But it also provided the outlet
for human
interaction, right? Now, I know there's a courtship movement. I'm not trying to go back to that. I'm just saying there was a structure there that was erased.
The other thing that I think you would be so great, and I do think was part of sort of human history, even if it was perverted and weird, and people talked about it weirdly, and especially in religious contexts, the idea that sex is a good thing. You know, I think that for 2,000 years the church has struggled to say yes. Yes, it is
right. Sometimes saying no.
Many times saying no, but it would have to be that within marriage that a man and a woman, it was good and right, mm-hmm, for them, mm-hmm, to be together too, or no, that would be good and right, like it's okay. It's good. It's what you want for a man and a woman to actually be together, mm-hmm, in that way within marriage. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a thing.
You don't think what's a thing?
In all the confusion and all the, you know, there's a lot of smoke in the air and bombs going off all around us. The idea that sex would be good in a context, mm-hmm, and that this would be the context in which it was good.
Mm-hmm. And outside that context is...
Outside that context, it's not good, it's dangerous, mm-hmm, but inside that context, it is right. Really good. And it's
to be desired, sought after if you can buy the cow.
That you stop saying buy the cow. Stop it.
Okay. Sorry.
Well, because we haven't agreed that we're starting to think that sex is bad, I think, in any context, you know, or certainly out
as a culture, you mean?
Yeah, as a culture.
I don't think the church thinks that. I mean, I don't think
no, I don't think the church
Christians
except
think
that I'm coming across so much weirdness, weird Christian writing about sex that's wrong and bad. Not so much. I'm coming across some Christian writing. Well, and I hesitate to use the word Christian.
Are you talking about sex or intimacy? Right?
Obviously, I mean intimacy. That's bad, like not biblical. I don't even think some of these people are actually Christian, but they're using that some of that language, and they would claim to be Christian.
You're referring to the punishment of the woman who doesn't have sex with her husband?
Yeah.
That was that article you read.
So sick.
By some person who I think, you know, wisely has not disclosed his name, but who
because he's like Jesus,
right?
Because Jesus didn't use parables to hide himself from the crowds. This person is using a pseudonym to hide himself from the crowds, just right. Like Jesus. And it's not satire; like he's not saying that as a joke,
right?
Because that's
so. He wrote an article giving 8 things for you to do as a male if your wife will not do her duty, sexually for you. Then you need to begin punishing her.
Well, he didn't use that word.
Disciplining her.
Right,
by,
like,
you remove her ability to buy things that she wants outside of food and clothing.
Well, even clothing.
Right. Food. You don't do any work around the house, except for necessary repairs to keep the family going.
You don't take her out.
Rebuke her Yeah.
You take it to the pastor or the church.
And that's the point that we should, I'm afraid you shouldn't link it in your article because it's such a bad, you shouldn't link it in your links.
It's so awful. Yeah, I would have to write about it if I linked it.
His point was, well, it's, you know, she's supposed to because 1 Corinthians 7, so she's violating scripture and, so she's and it's being a disciplinary
sexually,
issue.
She's being sexually immoral as if she was committing adultery.
Yeah, yeah. So that's possibly the most asinine thing I've read from and this person claims to be reformed. And there are lots of asinine things that Christians say, but that was the most asinine thing that I've read in many, many, many years.
Yeah. Sicko thing. Like, I felt physically unwell as I was reading it because this guy was just a creep and a weirdo. And if he, you know, his attitude was much like Matt Lauer, one could might, though the tone of the piece, even with all the Christian language.
He wrote another article, I think the same guy, saying this is how you can enjoy sexual relations with your wife even if she's doing it out of obligation.
Yeah. How can you still enjoy it if she's not?
Which I thought was... That's rapey.
Yeah, that is so...
That's abusive.
Then, on the side, he had a piece defending why you should vote for Roy Moore this week.
See, because isn't... I mean, it was almost... The whole conversation was devoid of any Ephesians 5 understanding of what it means for Christ to die for his church.
Well, he said... You can't use he talked about Ephesians 5, and that's not what that when Jesus died for the church, that's not what you don't die, you don't, you're owed your conjugal rights, and that doesn't have anything to do with the cross.
I mean, the least likely way to have your wife again would like to have intimacy with you is to rebuke and discipline her. I mean, I agree. I mean, if there's a problem there in the sexual area of your marriage, you know, you want to do what you can to maybe help her, or if it's you, help yourself by going to
a counselor, which he said you must not.
You know,
do.
You could instead of rebuking, start buying flowers. Yeah, you know, doing some work around the house.
No, you're
although
not
I read
to do that you're not
that
to
doesn't
do that.
Actually work, but I read that the more masculine work you do actually helps. But actually, you don't want to sweep the floors or do any dishwashing. You want to go out and change a pipe in the car, something like that, along those lines. But
so is that your entire motivation?
No, but the agape might work rather than rebuke. Like agape, like you just sacrificing your needs so that you can. Show affection and kindness to your wife might actually make more sense than rebuking her.
Okay, but what this guy, you know, he's not repulsed by the idea of being with a woman who doesn't want to be with him.
Yeah,
that doesn't repulse
him. That's weird.
And that's
weird.
That's weird, and that's out in the world. Like that's crazy. That's abusive.
What's happening? Oh, the bondage thing and the...
Oh, well, no. I just mean, like, okay, you read about the systematic raping of Yazidi women.
Oh, right.
Okay, and
it's
Matt,
about power there,
and,
right?
And
it's
Weinstein and Matt Lauer.
Yeah.
If you...
That's power.
Yeah, it's power. And it's awful.
Yeah.
And it's not Christian at all. And...
To try and infiltrate the Christian church with that kind
with
of thinking.
With that thing. And if people look in, and of course, people reading this thinking this might be Christian would think, oh my word, sex is bad in marriage too. It's bad outside and it's bad inside, and I don't want to have anything to do with it.
You know, back in the early centuries of the church, because, you know, the church began in a culture not in Palestine, but in, or Israel, but in wider Roman culture, Greco-Roman culture, where sex was completely out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was part of religion. It was part of, it was out of control and abusive. So there was a movement within the church for a while to have marriages where there was no sex in the marriage. The man and the wife. With the husband and wife both vow not to have intimacy with one another. And they would live like brothers and sisters. And that was considered the most holy way of being. And that was just corrupt as, I mean, that was corruption in the opposite direction. of marriage, right?
Right. Which I can see ending
up
there.
I can see our culture.
That's what I'm saying. I can see ending up there.
Right.
Where you can't even affirm it within marriage because it's so sicko and weird and wrong. Anyway, I feel like we should talk about something else for 3 minutes. I'm really depressed.
Yeah, we started off having a good time talking about something else.
The snowpocalypse.
We plan so carefully our podcasts. We go through and point by point decide what we're going to talk about. It takes about an hour. And then we get on in our studio.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's a ministry, really.
We should describe what really happens.
No, you keep describing it. No. Instead of describing what really happens, what is your one plan for the rest of Advent? What is your?
Well, I'm not in Advent. I'm in pre-Christmas season. I refuse to be an Advent Nazi. I love it. My plans are to make eggnog. Have more lights in the tree. I got to put more lights in the tree today. We got to straighten the tree up. It's crooked. It's leaning.
It is. The tree itself is crooked. It's just...
No, it's leaning.
No, it's not leaning. The thing of the... Whatever that thing that all the leaves, the needles come off of.
The trunk?
Yes. That thing is like in the shape of an S. I'm wondering if I've had some kind of little problem because I can't remember really basic words lately. I'm having a really hard time finding words, including for 2 weeks I haven't been able to remember the thing, the name of the thing where we on the Sunday
on the other thing the thing on the other thing
the Sunday before we do the pageant where we practice the last time and we do it with all the costumes,
the dress rehearsal.
This is really hard to remember that word, but there's increasing number of words like that I cannot lay my hand on.
I've been married to her for 16 years. I don't think that's totally new.
It's very new. It's happened to me just in the last week.
I think, really? I can remember you not remembering things. Maybe part of the problem is you can't remember that you can't remember.
Anyway.
So I'm gonna increase the Christmas cheer during Advent. And I'm also I'm going to find a way to get that tree out of the window.
Which no.
My wife.
We're talking to our public, so we should refer to each other in the third person.
my wife put...
I, as your wife...
Insisted that we put the Christmas tree in front of one of the windows in the living room. Because I don't know why. Because
the light sparkles against the window at night.
The sun goes down at 4:30 p.m.
And that's why it doesn't matter
where... Why on earth would you block one of the windows
You've
that we have.
You've answered your own question. Because there's no daylight anyway.
No, there is daylight from 7 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And so why?
And most of the day that we're in is in the dark. And so it's really nice with the lights twinkling off the light.
It's not nice to have a big honking tree filling up one of the windows when you're trying to have light.
I really feel like we should carry this argument into the next podcast.
Anyway, I'm going to figure out a way to move that thing.
Okay.
Before.
Well, I'm going to do school and work today, so.
Do you want some eggnog while you're...
And I'm going to be lighting my Advent candle and singing a sad song, so enjoy yourself. I think we should wrap this up.
Okay.
But thank you very much for listening, and we'll definitely be back next week with another Advent podcast. It has nothing to do with Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry.